Okay, and I think we're ready to go. So welcome everyone to, this is the call number 5 for Product Launch Formula 2.1. And glad you could make it. We've got a bunch of questions to go through here. If you're looking at the PowerPoint, we're going to go through a series of questions here. And then we're going to be able to open up the lines and take a few questions live. So if you want to ask a live question, then you'll have to call in using your telephone. But we're not going to be able to get to those, or we're not going to get to those questions for probably, I don't know, we'll probably go 45 minutes with this PowerPoint. So if you want to follow along on the PowerPoint, then you should be logged in online. And if you want to ask a question later on, a live question, ask me one-on-one, then go ahead and call in via the actual phone line that we gave you. So let's get started. Okay, first question. I think I've answered this before, but it keeps on popping up. Will I get hard copies of the course on DVD? And the answer is no. As you can see, we're creating this course in front of your eyes to answer your questions and really to answer, that's why it's a live course, because we're doing it, in real time for you, so we can mold the course to your needs. But that means it's an online course; it's not a DVD course. What I will do is I'm going to keep this course available. I know a lot of people have fallen behind, or people want to go back and reference this. You can download all of it. It's set up so just about 99% of it is all downloadable to your machine, so you can download the whole thing. But if you don't want to do that, then I'll keep it available for at least 6 months. When we first rolled out Product Launch Formula 2.0, I basically made the same promise, and now we're sitting about 10 or 11 months later, and the people that originally bought the course still have access to that. In fact, got access to the whole 2.1 plus version of it. So I do my best to take care of the people who buy the course, and so it's going to be available for at least 6 months. Okay, next question. The motivations of JV partners are not always about the money, and it seems you missed that point. In my market, for instance, partners are motivated more about how they are impacting the world in general than about the commissions they receive. There's also the impact that their participation will have on the reputations and public image. You don't seem to have any information on how to address these motivations. So I'll stop right there and answer that. I don't think I missed that point at all. If you go back, I mean, all the way from the very beginning of this course, I've always stressed focusing on what you want out of your launch, not how to make the most amount of dollars. And a lot of times what people want is they want to make an impact. They want to save the world. There's all kinds of reasons people do a launch. And I stress that right from the very beginning. You have to be clear before you design your launch to figure out exactly what your goals are, what you're after. Sometimes people just want to make a lot of money, but a lot of times that's not the case. In fact, I think majority of the times it's not just purely about the money. So obviously, if it's not about the money for you, it's also not always about the money for your partners. I mean, if you go back and look at, I covered, attracting partners in Module 2. And in Module 2, I talked about, the concerns of potential joint venture partners. One of them is their reputation, their image, their relationship with their list. All this stuff has been hit over and over and over throughout the course. So, I mean, I personally think this is the most holistic course and the most not pure money-making focused course you're going to find in internet marketing. So I don't know how you missed that stuff, but it's all in there. I mean, you have to figure out what partners want, and then you address those needs. Often it is about making money. And I'm willing to bet that in your case, there is a strong – partners do want to make money. So you have to show them how they're going to make money, but you also have to show them how it's going to impact their positioning. I mean, it's just you figure out what they want, and then you figure out how to get it for them. It's very, very simple, and it's been covered over and over throughout the course. What's the best way to find a bunch of new JV partners quickly? What if you're just entering a market and want to do a launch in 60 or 90 days? What steps do you take to recruit enough partners to make it worthwhile? Again, these are all, they were covered in Module 2. They were also in the bonuses I just released last week, the video from the live event that's on the main Product Launch Formula 2 webpage. You scroll down there, and one of the presentations was all about JVs. So I hope I'm not sounding defensive, folks, but I guess I'm just a little frustrated because I think this stuff has been covered over and over throughout, you know, throughout the course, and especially this idea of, you know, that people are motivated by other things other than money. I mean, I've hit that over and over. Okay, from Sam Rosen in Lenox, Massachusetts, are there any examples of cause-driven businesses, nonprofits, artists, and other non-traditional progressive organizations and individuals that are using Product Launch Formula? Yeah, there's a whole bunch. I don't have, let me think, I can't think of any specific case studies that I've done or released that are specific about artists or nonprofits, but it's definitely being used in nonprofits. It's definitely being used by artists, non-traditional progressive organizations. Of course, John Gallagher, everything he's doing on the learning herbs is all, you know, the hippie groovy, new agey, you know, medicinal and edible herbs and plants. And I think you would classify his entire membership site and website at learningherbs.com as being fairly progressive. Certainly nonprofits is something that I haven't done a lot of work with nonprofits, and I don't have case studies, but that's something I'm hoping to get a lot more involved in this in 2009. Okay, let's see. In selling a recurring digital product, is a $1 trial offer better or a free trial offer better? Why would one be better than the other, assuming you still collect the credit card info for the free trial? Basically, that last part's the important part. The reason you do the dollar, one of the big reasons, is to make sure you get the credit card and make sure it goes through and it's a good number. That aside, I would rather do the dollar trial because I think getting someone to give you some amount of money, even no matter how small, is significant. And it's always easier to have people give you more money once they give you money the first time. Now, I'll admit I haven't done, you know, a pure A-B split test in this where we test the dollar trial versus free. But all my marketing experience and my gut instinct tells me I'd much rather go for the dollar trial rather than the free trial. And I think if it's a pure free trial, you're going to probably have just as hard a time getting someone's credit card information as with the dollar trial. You know, because if you look at the three, there's a dollar trial, the free where you get their credit card, or the free and don't get the credit card. You'll get a lot more people signing up for the free and don't get credit card, but your conversions are going to be awful. You know, I think the difference in conversion rate probably between the dollar trial and just the free where you get their credit card is probably going to be fairly similar. But I bet the conversion in the end to the actual getting them to really pony up and pay is going to be higher with the dollar trial. Okay. This comes out of a question on selling an affiliate product, someone else's product. If I'm going to do a launch on an affiliate product, how do I deliver the bonuses when my database buys from someone else? In most cases, for most affiliate programs that you join, you will or you can get the contact information of the buyers. If, you know, and a lot of times it's built right into the reporting of the whatever affiliate program that you are, you know, that you're promoting. If it's not built right in, then you can get a hold of the product producer and ask them if you can get the contact information. You explain why you're doing it, that you're offering a special bonus, and that you need the contact information so you can deliver the bonus. Generally, they'll do that. You got to check all this ahead of time. If they won't give you the contact information, then you can't do it. You could do something. It's a little sloppy, but you could say, you could give the buyers instructions. You can say, I'm putting together this bonus. But, you know, so this is what you need to do to collect the bonus. After you purchase, then you need to send me an email at this address send me a copy of your receipt, and then I'll get you the bonus. So that's a fairly sloppy way of doing it, but that is a way you can do it if you just can't get the information, the contact information. Next question. Hi, Jeff. I'm using a blog as homepage and submitting keyword-focused articles each day as you recommend. What do I do about keyword plurals versus singular, both with good search results? I ask this, as on the blog there will be two similarly titled but differently worded articles on essentially the same topic, one below the other in the same category list, which may look bad to potential customers, but I don't want to miss out on the traffic. Well, what you'd want to do, there's a few answers to this. If you really want to have those, first of all, you can have multiple blogs. You can have your main blog on the main page of your main site, but you could also have another blog on a different site. And you could put the similar posts in the different areas. But what you want to do is if you do have that second blog, you want it to be more what we call a feeder blog. That's a term that Jeff Johnson came up with, my buddy Jeff Johnson. It's a feeder site, a feeder blog. So you're not putting your best content on there. You're putting your traffic-generating, keyword-focused phrases, your long-tail phrases, and then you're trying to get people to opt in from that site. But you still have your main site where your highest quality content is. So that's one way you could do it. And you don't have to stop at two blogs. You can have multiple blogs. But if you don't want to do that, if you want to stick with one site, well, what you need to do is you need to write fairly different articles about the two phrases. And you don't want to give it like if it was selling wooden dolls was your topic, and wooden doll was one phrase and wooden dolls was another phrase. And you would want to write two pretty distinctly different articles for each phrase. And, one could be simply titled Wooden Dolls, and the other one could be, How I Came to Carve My First Wooden Doll. So you have that, you include that phrase in the title, but it's a very different-looking article, and it is, in fact, a completely different article. So you could have, you could easily have articles for a singular and a plural, where they're completely different articles with completely different titles and have them both on your site and have nothing look funny about that. You just have to be a little bit creative. Okay, next question. This is from Michael in New York. I often give talks and collect email addresses from attendees. How can I convert those people who gave me their addresses to a double opt-in list? Well, the best way to do this is to basically to promise them something. Like what I would typically do is if I'm speaking and I do some type of a business card collection at the event, what I'll do is I'll tell people about a case study, and maybe I'll briefly go over the case study during my talk, and I'll say, and if any of you want to get the full details on the full case study, like the audio and the transcripts, the whole shoot and match, then just see me after I finish my talk and give me your business card and just write PowerPoint on the business card. So then afterwards, if you do something like that, typically you'll get anywhere from 50 to 80% of the people will give you their business cards. Then what you do is you send those people, you put together an opt-in page, and the opt-in page says, secret page for people, secret page for attendees of whatever the event was, okay? And so they feel special about that. And then you say, to get your full case study, just put your name and email address in here. Then what you do is you go and you send individual emails, or better yet, have your assistant send individual emails to all the people from all those business cards that says, okay, to get your case studies, you just have to go to this page and, put your name and email address in, and we'll get it to you right away. And what you're doing is you're sending them to the opt-in page. Now, typically what you'll do is you'll get a very high opt-in rate from that type of an offer because, the people saw you talk, they have a warm relationship with you already, and they will tend to respond to that and opt in at a very, very high rate. And then you just take them through your double opt-in process before they get whatever the case study is. It doesn't have to be a case study. It could be your checklist or or any type of resource that matches with the talk you gave. Okay, Michael also asks, I haven't signed up for a list host, and I was looking at Profollow and AWeber, and noticed that although the price is pretty much the same, with AWeber, the $19 charge covers 500 subscribers, and with Profollow, it covers 10,000 subscribers. They call it leads, but leads and subscribers are the exact same. I email Profollow. To find out why there's such a difference in how many names you get a month, and they email back to say that AWeber now has an analytics package and Profollow doesn't have that. How important is the analytics package? That's quite a discrepancy in the amount of subscribers between the two services. Okay, so this is the deal. I'd say about 6 months ago, Profollow added in this big new analytics package. And crazily enough, I haven't really been using it yet. It is more expensive if you get it with the analytics package. Now, if you go to AWeber and purchase right now, then you automatically have to get the analytics package, and the pricing is higher. It's basically the same to start out, but as you grow your list, then it starts to cost you more money. It gets more expensive than the basic non-analytics package as you start to grow a whole bunch of subscribers. The reality is most of AWeber's customers really don't have really large lists, and they're not going to be all that affected by the increasing costs as the number of subscribers go up. In any case, at this point, I haven't thrown the switch yet for Profollow to have that analytics package. So right now, if you sign up for Profollow, you get sort of the basic level. Sometime in the next few months, we're going to be switching that over so people can get the analytics package. So I'm trying to be clear here. If you get Profollow, you get the basic now, and then when we open up the analytics capability, you'll have the choice to switch over. So if you want to just go with the basic package right now, Profollow is your only choice. And then down the road, in a couple of months, you'll have that capability to switch over to the analytics package. With basically, the analytics means you get a lot more tracking and data and reporting. And it's some really cool stuff. And I'm definitely going to be switching over to it. I've just been so busy lately that I haven't had the time to get into the nitty-gritty and figure out how to do that. I'm certainly going to be switching over to the analytics for my personal account. So that's the deal. I hope that was fairly clear. Basically, right when you first sign up, they cost the same amount of money. The analytics package gets more expensive as you add in more subscribers. The analytics package has more capabilities. Right now, if you don't want the analytics and you want the basic package, then you go with Profollow, and that will still eventually, in a couple of months, give you the ability to upgrade to the analytics if you want that. So I hope that answered the question without being too confusing. It is a sort of a confusing question and topic. Okay. From Mark in Pasadena, hi, Jeff. You're recommending we have a continuity program. Can you share a few tips you've learned about creating monthly content for it? Huge thanks for the great calls. Well, Mark, frankly, continuity programs are really great because they give you sell once and you keep on making money into the future. I don't know if I've necessarily recommended doing it. I think it's great. Launches are great for launching a continuity program. They are great to do continuity programs from the financial aspects. There's a lot of other great aspects. You have these people you're constantly in touch with, so then you can sell them other stuff or sell them affiliate stuff. They're really cool that way. It can be a bit of a treadmill when you have to continually create content. Frankly, for me, at times I have struggled with creating ongoing continuity, the content for the continuity programs. I like to work really hard for a while and then kick back. So sometimes, I'm being personal here, sometimes it can be challenging for me. And I know there are other people like me. And, a continuity program, no matter how appealing financially, if you're like that, it might not be right for you. It's not right for everyone. Okay, so that being said, the best way to do to create the content is to be continuing a dialogue to figure out with your customers, your clients, figuring out what they need and what they want. and continually be querying them and then just be creating what they want. Also, a lot of times you can have user-generated content. I mean, a forum, if you have an active forum, it can be a form of user-generated content. You're not creating the content. They're creating the content. They're creating the community. It can be really good that way. And another thing you can do, and I've done a lot of, is case studies. Case studies are great because they're motivating and people can all learn from each other. So when you do case studies, you know, it can be a great way to create content without much pain, you know, in a fairly quick and easy manner. Interviewing other experts is obviously a fairly quick and easy way to create content for a program. But the number one thing is to continually stay in that dialogue with your clients and always be asking them what they need and what they want, and then just creating that for them. Okay, and next question. Jeff, you suggested we have an evergreen product like dog training. How in the heck do you invoke scarcity if it's an evergreen product? Again, I don't know if I've necessarily, you know, I've defined an evergreen product. I've talked about some of the good things about an evergreen product, but it isn't like I went up to the mountain and shouted out, everyone needs an evergreen product. I don't think I've ever had an evergreen product in the last, however long I've been publishing online, 12 years or something like that, 12, 13 years. I've never had an evergreen product. I mean, I sold stuff about the stock market. That stuff, I had to create that every single day. And then product launch formula stuff's changing so quickly that I'm continually revising it. So, you know, evergreen is great to have. I think nothing, I think you'd be hard pressed to find anything that is truly, truly evergreen. Dog training, that's certainly evolving. Even if it's not evolving, there's a perception that's evolving. So, if people, you know, 10 years from now, your dog training videos probably aren't going to be that effective because people will look at them and they'll look dated because of the clothes people are wearing or the hairstyles or the eyeglasses that people are wearing. They'll look dated and people think they're dated. And even if the techniques still work, they'll think they don't work anymore. So nothing's truly, truly evergreen. Certainly some things you can sell for a long time, but in any case, if you want to, scarcity, you know, we go over this over and over and over. You know, there's ways you can do scarcity. You do it with bonuses, you do it with prices, and you do it with product availability. Just because it's evergreen doesn't mean it always has to be on the market. You can release it and then pull it off the market, release it and pull it off the market. You can do that three or four times a year, no problem. You can add bonuses. You know, add bonuses and do a launch for that. You can, and then also you could do stuff with prices, or you could bundle other stuff with it. It's just because something's evergreen doesn't change anything about the way you market it. I mean, you know, you have to make a decision. You might just want to do launch it when it's new and leave it on the market. Lots of people want to do that. For some products, some markets, we've proven that it can be more effective to launch it, pull it back, launch it, pull it back, launch it, pull it back. Not every product is going to be a perfect fit for that. For products that, like, people need, like, all of a sudden a need pops up and they need that immediately, you know, like maybe like logo design or something like that, you know, it's not, you know, people aren't going to wait around 3 months to get their logo designed, okay? When they realize they need that design, then they're going to get it done. Doesn't mean you couldn't do a launch and bring in a whole bunch of new people that might be sitting on the fence or they haven't thought about getting a logo done or, you know, but, you know, that's probably not something you keep on bringing back and forth. But every 3 or 4 months you could do a launch where you maybe you lower the price or you bundle in some bonus or you bundle in some other product. You find some complementary product and do a cross promotion. You know, it's going back to it, the three main ways to create scarcity is making the product, you know, having the product go away, be not available, having bonuses go away or not be available, or playing around with the price, lowering the price or giving them more for the same amount. Okay, next question. When you temporarily take a product off the market at the end of the launch, how long does it stay off the market? Do you have another product launch to put it back or what? You know, typically I would keep something off the market for at least 4 weeks. you know, you could play with that. You could make it 3 weeks or even 2 weeks, but I'd keep it off for about 4 weeks at least. 6 weeks might even be better. And then, yeah, I would, if you pull a product off the market, it's off the market, I would definitely do another product launch to put it back on the market. It's probably not going to be to the same extent as your first launch, but you go back and, you know, basically when you go through a launch, you have certain, you know, themes that you're hitting. Whatever your main primary story is and the objections that you pound into the ground as you go through your launch, you go back and you highlight those. But maybe with your initial launch, you had a three-week pre-launch. When you take off the market for, say, 4 weeks, when you come back, now maybe you just have like a 3 or 4 day pre-launch. So you compress it. You just go after the main key points, and then you bring it back on the market. Because it's always great. I mean, you've got another chance to have another open. People in the market still remember you after 4 weeks, so you're still playing on the momentum you had there. So just do another 2, 3, 4 day pre-launch, and then a quick open, and you're not going to get the same power that you got from the previous one, unless you brought in a whole bunch of new partners. And if you bring in a whole bunch of new partners, then you should probably do a more extensive launch. Maybe wait just a little bit longer and have a more extensive launch. But, yeah, you definitely want to get that second open because you'll get another pop. It won't be like that first pop, but you'll definitely get another pop. Okay, next question is from Diana. Is membership software similar to ProFollow in the sense that when you subscribe or buy, you can have multiple lists in any niche without paying a new subscription fee for each new list? Said differently, does each niche membership site require a new purchase in setup fee, or can multiple sites be run within the main software / subscription purchase? Okay, so ProFollow, just to be clear, I think Diana knows this, but just to be clear, ProFollow is not membership software. When you get an account with ProFollow, you can set up multiple lists. I've probably got 20 different lists in my account. So you can set up just as many lists literally as you want. Now, when you go with membership site software, you know, like I've talked about A-Member, and I've talked about MemberGate. Sorry, folks, a little brain cramp there. Talked about MemberGate. There's lots of other ones. I've heard good stuff about this Wild Apricot. I have no experience using it, but I've heard good stuff about it. And there's lots of them. And the deal is they each have their different licensing arrangements. Some of them you can run multiple sites. Some of them you run one main site that can run other sites. Some of them you have to buy a new license for each site. So they're all very, very different in how they work. They're all very, very different in their capabilities. They're all very different in their price structure. And they're all very different in the licensing. But generally, if you just go to the sites, take a look at them, you can figure out pretty quickly, you know, they'll have an FAQ and they'll talk about what their licensing is. And you just have to, you know, find ones that's got the capabilities you want and then check out the licensing and see if you can live with the licensing. Okay, I'm getting through these questions pretty quick. So for the people that are on the phone, we're going to be getting to you fairly soon. And you can go ahead. Well, I'll give you, you know, just get ready with your questions, and we'll give you instructions for in a few minutes. Okay, the next question. My site relates to doing ongoing launches for a membership site. You've mentioned previously that John Gallagher runs relaunches on a regular basis for his herbal site and does not take new members outside of the launch participants. Can you please explain more about this process? Would we send new prospects through a launch sequence by autoresponder and then send them to a hidden sales page on the website, say, after 30 to 45 days on the list receiving sample content? How do we handle people who choose to stay on the free list once they've seen the launch two or more times? Do we need to come up with a totally new launch every time since they've seen it? Okay, so John's doing a few different things on his site. First, he sells his board game. He sells actual herbal kits where you get these kits and you use them to make herbs. You're using them to make, I don't know what you're using them to make, but you get a bunch of herbs and you can use them to make probably tinctures and salves and, you know, other herb medicinal stuff. That is a physical kit that ships in a box. He does a launch for that every month. So what he does is the new people who have joined his list in the last month go through a launch cycle. Then each month he goes through that launch cycle with the new people on his list. That's really easy to do with a service like Profollow or Aweber, because all you have to do is basically you can sort who your broadcast goes to by when they've joined your list. Now, some other services like email services don't allow you to do that, but with Profollow it's real easy. You just say, you know, only mail to the people who've joined since such and such a date. Now, in terms of his membership site, I think he's done three launches in about a year's time. He's done three launches. So every 3 or 4 months, he reopens it up. He does tell a different story, a slightly different story each time. The story still hits the same primary objections and mental triggers. He might change it a little bit due to the season because, you know, herbs and plants, are, you know, obviously that's tied to the growing season. So he can tie it to his, launch those growing seasons. Now, I don't know for sure he does this, but I'd be surprised if he didn't, because John's a smart guy, and it's just a natural to do something like that. But basically, you can use pretty much the same launch. You'll shake up the copy just a little bit. You'll tell a story in a slightly different way, but 95% of it can be the same. I did this in my stock market business over and over and over, like clockwork, 2 or 3 times a year. I would just change the copy a little bit. In general, people don't remember what you did. They're too busy. They're not living and breathing on every word you said. They're not, you know, maybe a few of them are, but very few will be saving all your emails and looking back and saying, oh, hey, you did this 6 months ago. This is just a scarcity play. I know what you're doing. They're not going to do that. This isn't something to worry about. So you can do basically the same type of launch over and over. You're just slightly, you're changing the, you know, the theme. Might be around the season, might be around holidays, might be around your birthday. It could be around tax day. It could be around any number of things. But you're doing the same basic launch and just a slight little tweak, 5% different, and that's all you need to do. Okay, let's see if we've got one more question. Yep, we got one more question. I think this is the last one from Sandra. Sandra, if you were doing your first launch ever for a home study course very similar to how you teach PLF, how small would you keep the first class? Also, would you recommend sending out CDs instead of setting up a password-protected site with the material available to download? Given my choice, I'd put at least 60 to 100 people in that class. Because if you're going to be doing live calls like this, you want to have a bunch of people on the calls to make it interactive and to give you some energy. And the reality is if you put 100 people in that class, you'll probably only have 20 or 30 people showing up on the calls, because people are just really, really busy and you know, a lot of times they won't make it on the calls. Especially, you know, what you'll see is 70% of them make it on the first call and 50% make it on the second call. By the time you get out to your fifth call, you're going to have 20% of the people on the call. I've seen this over and over in all kinds of different markets. It's just the way it works. And so I'd want, you know, if I could get 100 people in, I would put 100 people in. You know, I'd aim for at least 60 people. Now, personally, I think putting up a password-protected site is easier than doing CDs. There's a lot of work. I mean, I've done it both ways. There's a lot of work with laying out a CD and getting everything on there and getting it all proofread and getting everything laid out perfect and making sure it works on all kinds of different machines and getting it actually created and getting it proofed and getting the design done. And it can be a fairly lengthy, laborious process. You know, you could probably just go to Craigslist and find someone who can set up a password-protected site. Or, you know, if you go with one of the more expensive solutions, they might do it for you. Or you know, if you go to whoever you buy it from, often they'll offer an installation service, or they'll have someone they can recommend that'll do the tech for you. And I think it can be easier you know, I guess, you know, it's six of one, half dozen of the other. But I think most people find it easier to put up a password-protected site. Now, continue on with Sandra's question. I'm concerned about not having a technical person available for my first launch and worry that I may experience technical issues that are beyond my capabilities. Would you have a technical person available for all launches, regardless how small the launch may be? No, you know, I'd go listen to the audio I did with Paul Myers. It's one of the bonuses on the main page of the PLF site on inexpensive launches. And we talked about how to do, you know, real low-dollar, simple launches. I really didn't have anyone supporting me technically. I mean, I don't have great skills. I don't have any programming skills at all. I can sort of bumble my way through an HTML page. And I was able to figure it out through a whole bunch of launches. I mean, you know, like I said, no programming experience. I can bungle my way through ugly HTML, but I am pretty savvy with software. And I was able to figure it out on my own for quite a while. I would, if you can get a tech person to at least look over your stuff, I would. For small launches, until I got up into sort of the $500,000 range, I really wasn't getting any tech support at all. You know, when I did six figures in 7 days, I basically had no real tech support whatsoever on that. You know, it's also, you know, once you start getting into joint ventures and having a lot of partners, then generally your technical needs go, you know, increase, because you need to make sure you're tracking all the sales for those folks. But, you know, until you get up to sort of that level, certainly don't need a full-time tech person. It's always good to have someone you can call, you can tap into. But usually you can find that either through, like, Craigslist is my number one recommendation right now, or whoever, you know, creating your, you know, whoever you bought your software from, your shopping cart, your web software, your affiliate program software, your membership site software, they'll often have someone that they can recommend to do the work for you. Okay, that was the last question on our slides. I'm going to go grab a couple questions that were just typed in, you know, just the last few minutes, and then we'll open it up for some live questions. Okay, this one's from Kevin in San Diego. I sell DVDs and books to my niche market of triathlon swimming. I'm coming out with a new product, waterproof drill cards, which is pretty much the same content as my DVD and book in a different format. Is it necessary for me to have people on my current list re-opt in to a new list for the product launch, or would it be okay to assume my current list would want to be part of the launch? Couple different answers to this. Yes, it's certainly the same subject matter. It's, you can certainly assume that they're going to be interested in it. The one thing is like, if you've only been, like you've been sending them email like maybe twice a month or once every couple months, and all of a sudden you're going to get them in a launch cycle where they start to get, you know, they get an email, and then 5 days later another email, and then 4 days later another email, and then 3 days later another email, and then they start getting an email every day for a week. If you start doing something like that, basically you've sort of shifted the contract you have with them where, you know, they were expecting to get something from you every 2 weeks or every month or every 2 months, and now all of a sudden you're mailing them every single day. In that case, you probably want them to get opt into a new list. You still keep them on the old list. That's the beauty, because if they opt into that new list, you're mailing that new list like crazy during your launch. Even if they unsub from that, they're still on your main list. Now, if you've been sending them something like every week or maybe even, you know, a couple times a week, you could probably just go ahead and do a launch with those guys. And you know, so you up the frequency for a couple of weeks, they'll probably be just fine with it. So a couple different answers there, but it really depends on what you've been giving them in the past and how that relates to what, you know the quantity you would send during a product launch. Kevin in Victoria has a question. Is it a good idea to offer a service for free to a limited number of clients to harness testimonials? Is this something that's done, and if so, how effective is this strategy? Yes, that's done, and it's effective. I mean, testimonials are really important. Case studies are better. And, you know, if you can figure out some way to get the product in people's hands, It's always best that they pay for it, because then more of them are going to actually use it, and then you're going to get better testimonials. But if you have to give it away to get it in people's hands to get those testimonials, it's always a good thing to do. It's not absolutely required, but it's a very good idea, and it's very effective. We have a comment here from Nico in Las Vegas, who is answering. He's basically talking about one of the questions earlier where I talked about if you were launching an affiliate product and you had a bonus that you were going to offer and you couldn't track through the affiliate reporting, would not actually give you the buyers. He said, yeah, he just did it. He basically had people send him their receipt. He said, I just did that and bundled my products with it and made about $1,600 in a day. That's awesome, Nico. Congratulations. So like I mentioned, usually you can get into someone's in your affiliate reporting panel, you can access the buyers. But if you can't, then you can just basically give them instructions and, you know, send me your receipt at such and such an address, and then I will get you the bonus. From DUI in Ohio, a vote of confidence. Just tuned in. I think you've covered the material very well. Part of why I took the chance on this course is your holistic approach. So job well done so far. Thanks, DUI. And sorry, folks, for, you know, reading this pat on the back, but that goes back to one of those first questions I answered where they said, boy, I wasn't addressing, you know, when something's important to people other than making money. And I frankly think I have over and over through the course. Okay, this is a good question from Barry in Buffalo, New York. Subject lines of email are getting worse and worse each day, and they are not always being created by newbies. Soon open rates will get as low as interest rates. I hope not, since interest rates are just about 0% here in the U.S. What's your thoughts on this potential serious issue, Jeff? Well, frankly, I hope everyone else's subject lines get worse and worse and worse, because that'll just make mine look better and better and better. You know, I just don't worry. This, you know, Gary, thanks for the question. But, you know, this is the type of thing, I don't care what other people are doing. I hope they mess it up. I mean, you know, I don't tend to worry about competition too much, but I do know there's a lot of competition out there. Certainly in my market, there's a ton of competition. And I'm aggravated personally, not on a that I care about these guys are ruining their businesses or whatever. But when someone, for instance, sends me an email and says, personal, and it says personal for Jeff or something like that, and I open it up, and it's not a personal message. It was sent out to their list, and you can tell because it's an unsubscribe link at the bottom. You know, in effect, and I know I'm going to actually probably make some of my buddies mad at me for saying this, but I think that that's a lie, you know, because they didn't write it personal. It was not a personal email to me. And just because they personally wrote it to 10,000 people, that doesn't make it personal. And so when I get that, I unsubscribe. And that's my, you know, an example of what I think is an awful subject line. So, you know, basically you got to look at what you think is not working and don't do it. You know, this is a fundamental law of success. I think it was Napoleon Hill that said it first. If you want to have success, look at what everyone else is doing and do the opposite. Because the reality is that most people aren't having great success, so you don't want to follow them. So I love everything I do. I'm always trying to be different from other people. It's not always possible, but I'm trying to be. So if they're screwing up their subject lines, you know, perfect. Because, you know, hopefully I'm not the one screwing up my subject lines, and mine are getting a good open rate. So, you know, and the other thing you do, the other answer to it, of course, is to be always testing and always looking at what your results are. And, you know, do the things that work and stop doing the things that don't work. Okay, Dan in Norfolk, Virginia, if you do not have a list, how would you get started and make PLF work? Go back and go through the list building stuff. You know, the two list building sections that I've covered, I forget exactly which module they're in, but they're in there. That's how I would start. And I have started from scratch and without a list, and I've used those exact techniques. Okay, from Al in Daly City, California, I'm starting from scratch and still building a list. How much time should I give myself to build a substantial list before I drop the news that something's coming and I get the pre-launch process going? You know, it all depends on how successful you are with your list building and how quickly that goes. It's not so much a matter of time. That depends on how effective you are with your list building strategy and your niche. Some niches, it's easier to build a list fast. But what I would look at is more the size of the list. I mean, to do the very, very basic seed list that I covered, you know, you could do that with a couple hundred people on your list. I mean, you could probably do it with 50 or 60 people on your list, but I'd wait till I had 200 or 300 people on the list till I tried anything like that. So that's the kind of numbers I would start to go after before I really went into the pre-launch. Here's one from Nico. He's the one that gave us a great comment. So his question is, what software is running your members area for product launch formula? I want to set my product on that also. That's AMember, AMEMBER, which is a very inexpensive script. I think it's definitely under $200, and I think that includes installation. I think it's might be $150. And it's pretty customizable, but you have to do a lot of work to make it look right. In other words, you're not getting it doesn't come with a fancy design or anything like that. What you're getting is the software to really run the behind-the-scenes stuff. So, you know, there's all different choices with the membership site software, everything from, you know, MemberGate, and they'll do basically everything for you. And the other end of the spectrum where a member doesn't really do anything for you, but you do get a lot of flexibility that way. Okay, from John and Matt Rhodes in Binghamton, New York. How do you transition from an internal launch to a public launch with JV partners? Really what you do is you do the internal launch, and then, you let people you do the launch, you deliver the product, you do some follow-up, you give them some extra bonuses they weren't supposed to get, and then you gather testimonials, you gather case studies. And then you just come back and do the public launch. It's just that there is no real transition. They're sort of discrete events, except for you definitely want to – the internal launch is all about making sure you have all your systems in place, everything's working, everything's good to go, your delivery is spot on, your product is spot on. You don't have any holes in your product. But also you're working with your new clients to make sure they get the results, so then you come back with case studies. The internal launch is really about, pulling some money out of your list, but more importantly, testing all your systems and making sure everything's good to go, everything's in place. Because what happens is when you go to the joint venture launch, it really is about twice as hard. I mean, doing the joint venture piece is about as hard as doing all the other stuff combined. So basically what you've done is you split your total amount of work over two launches. You do that internal launch and get all that work done. And then when you go to the JV launch, you're basically just repeating that work from the internal launch. So that stuff's already done. There's not much additional work there. And now you can really focus on your partners. So what you've done is you've tested your systems and you've split your work up over two launch cycles. But in terms of the transition, there's just not much to it. It's just whenever the timing's right, whenever you can get, you see the timing for your JV partners where there's an opening in maybe their calendar and they can promote for you, when there aren't other products that you're going to, that other people are hitting those partners up for. It's not always easy to find an opening in a calendar in some markets. But when the timing works out, then you just go right into it. But hopefully one of the things you leverage from your internal launch is case studies and testimonials. Okay, let's see. I'm going to go for one more of these questions that were typed in. Here's a quick one. Do you have any links to the Yonex event? I guess I forget where I put it out. Maybe on Twitter or somewhere on Facebook that I am going to be attending Yonex Underground event. I'll send out a link to that. I'm not going to be speaking there. I'm just attending. His events are great, and I try to. I think I've only missed one of them. And that's because of a conflict with a family event. I will be going to Yonex Underground, and not speaking, just showing up. But I'll send out a link to that. Okay, I'm looking for one or two more questions from here, and then I'll go to the live questions on the telephone. Here's one from Manuel in Bath or Bath. I wonder if I have to submit my questions from last call again. Yeah, basically, if you have a question that I didn't get to on one of the previous calls, please submit it again. I know that might be a pain for you, but it just, with the way our workflow goes, it's much easier to to be focusing on the questions that get asked each week, as opposed to going back and trying to pick out the ones that we didn't answer. You know, I'm not getting to every question. I'm doing my best. I'm answering a bunch of them. I think I'm answering the majority of them, but some people don't get their questions answered. This is from Alan in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Lovely area. With the idea of creating a bonus to go along with an e-commerce product launch, how do you imply scarcity without appearing to be manipulating the situation? In other words, once you've created an informational bonus, especially one that's downloadable, how do you create real, believable scarcity? Generally, I like to base my scarcity in reality. If it's downloadable and it's going to be available forever, then there is no real scarcity there, right? But, if you talk about it ahead of time saying, boy, people have been asking about this for a long time. They've been, literally standing in line, actually not literally, but virtually standing in line. They can't wait to get a hold of this bonus. We're going to be releasing it on January 22nd at 12 noon. If you want to be one of the first ones to get this bonus, be sure to be on the lookout for that email. I'm going to send an email out when this bonus is available. You definitely want to be one of the first ones to get a hold of it, so watch for that email. So right there, I just basically try to imply scarcity, and I think it would work for a lot of people. I think that would definitely get people amped up and get them ready to jump, but it didn't mention scarcity at all. Something like that. You could say, the other way you could do it is create real scarcity, and it doesn't have a real good reason why, but something like that, you could just say, people have been wanting to get this, we've had this information available for several months. We've finally gotten around to putting it together, putting it into a form that you can actually download. As part of the special we're having next week, you can get, you can get to actually get this report or whatever, this lesson, this tutorial, for free. It's not going to cost you anything. You get it for free with your purchase of, this widget. Now, since this is a special promotion, you're only going to be able to get that for 3 days. And, after 3 days, you're no longer going to be able to get, the special bonus. You'll still be able to get the widget, but you won't get the bonus. So, again, I'm not trying to, put any pressure on you or pull any of these crazy scarcity tactics or anything, but if you want to get that bonus, you're going to have to, jump on it within that 3-day period. Right there, you got real scarcity. The scarcity is because you dictated the scarcity. You didn't give a reason why, but you don't really have to give a reason why. It's more powerful if you do, but you don't have to. I mean, it's you created the bonus. It's your bonus to give away. If you're going to give a bonus, nothing says you have to give a bonus forever. I mean, it's yours. You created it. You make the rules. It's your business. So, just do it that way. It's real simple. That's one common theme I see, and is that people tend to make things a lot harder than they are. And the reality is this is something I personally do quite a bit myself. So I think it's easy for me to see it in others because I can see other people making the same mistakes. A lot of times I'll just get too hung up on something, and this is the typical thing I would get hung up on. I'd be all stressed out. How can we make this thing scarce if, it's just a downloadable product? The reality is it's your product. You set the rules. You make the rules. So don't make this harder than it is. It's actually not hard at all. This one is from Tim in Monroe, North Carolina. Jeff, am I overkilling my resources? What I mean is I've signed on with Profollow, SurveyMonkey, SiteSell, which is a website builder, and 5 social media sites. I'm wondering if I'm overlapping with the first 3 websites in order to get a survey out there to start a list build. Should my survey be on my website or SurveyMonkey? I just use SurveyMonkey. Some people straight to SurveyMonkey. Another thing is you can get, SurveyMonkey, they have a free service and a paid service. I think the paid service is like $20 a month. I use the paid service, but you can actually do quite a bit with just the free service. So before you actually pay for it, you might want to check out the free service. I think there's sort of the biggest limit is the number of responses you can get. It might be like 50 or 100 responses or something like that for each survey. But for a lot of people just starting out, you can use their free version. So I would definitely take a look at that. SiteCell, I'm really not all that familiar with, but I do know it allows you to build sites without a lot of technical expertise. I've heard some good things about it. About the five social media sites, I am not sure whether you're paying for them or whether you're just using them. Most of the social media sites are free. I mean, like the ones to be on right now, in my opinion, are Facebook and Twitter. Hope you guys are all following me on Twitter and on Facebook. And those are free. There's no charge there whatsoever. With ProFollow, you need to have list management software, and I highly recommend ProFollow or Aweber. So I don't think, you're necessarily, this is overkill at this point. Really what you need to have a website, you need to have a list host, and you need, and then you definitely need to be building your social media presence.